WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Emergency crews in East Hollywood are on the scene of reports of a vehicle striking about 20 people in a crowd with 4 to 5 in critical condition. There are a few details known, but Southern California is in mourning. Law enforcement lining the road along to the county coroner's office in memory of 3 sheriff's deputies killed in an explosion Friday at a training facility. L.A. County Sheriff Robert Luna said,
"This is unfortunately the largest loss of life for us as the L.A. County Sheriff's Department since 1857.
Nobody else was hurt. Authorities are investigating the case. President Trump signed the first major piece of federal legislation regulating cryptocurrency. He's also instructed the Justice Department to seek the release of grand jury transcripts from the Jeffrey Epstein case. This is ABC News. Teenager in Maine's in custody in connection with the killing of a paddleboarder. Authorities say 48-year-old Sunshine Stewart was killed paddleboarding near 100-acre island. ABC's Aaron Katursky has more.
Court records identify the teen as Devin Young from Frankfort, Maine, and prosecutors say he acted with depraved indifference to Stewart's life when he allegedly strangled and bludgeoned her to death. Sources told ABC News the teen had been summering with his family at the same campground as the 48-year-old. Young appeared remotely in front of a judge and denied the allegations. The judge ordered he be kept at a juvenile detention center in Portland until his next court date in August.
Former CEO of a pair of fashion technology companies is free on $1 million bail after she pleaded not guilty to charges she cheated investors of over $300 million. Federal prosecutors say Christine Hunsaker forged documents, fabricated audits, and made material misrepresentations about the companies Castle Incorporated and P180. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In a chaotic and somewhat discombobulating end to the process, Wisconsin lawmakers passed a state budget and Governor Tony Evers signed it into law at about 1:30 a.m. on July 3rd. What made this budget different from the others signed in this era of divided government is that Democratic votes were needed to pass the budget in the state Senate. Part of the reason that was made possible is because of new, fairer maps. Last November, Senate Democrats flipped 4 seats, shrinking the Republican majority to just an 18-15 margin. Now, candidates are already lining up to take this the rest of the way and flip the chamber. Democrat Janet Jacobson, who currently serves in the Assembly, is now running for Senate, challenging Republican Howard Markline in the 17th District. If Democrats can flip that district and one more seat, they could control the state Senate for the first time in more than 15 years. That would be a big deal for state politics in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman. A resident of Eau Claire is speaking out about the impact of cuts to safety net programs. Programs like Medicaid and SNAP. Judith Ruiz-Branch of the Wisconsin News Connection reports.
Oliver Wynn and his parents all live with disabilities. He says Medicaid has allowed him to have surgeries that have improved his quality of life to such a degree that he no longer needs a wheelchair. It also helps him pay for medication that would otherwise cost $5,000 a month. Wynn describes the forthcoming federal cuts to Medicaid and SNAP as terrifying.
It's going to change a lot of things for a lot of people, and I'm concerned for myself. I'm concerned for my family, my community. Everyone is going to be affected by this.
It's estimated more than 276,000 people in Wisconsin could lose their Medicaid coverage, and another 90,000 risk losing their SNAP benefits over the next decade. 1 in 8 people in Wisconsin depends on SNAP to help pay for groceries. Wynn is one of them. Although he currently works overnight shifts, he says he still needs SNAP to afford food for him and his child. Before he had Medicaid and SNAP, Wynn says his high medical debts meant he struggled to keep up with food and housing expenses, which led him to become homeless.
Because there's no way to balance trying to feed yourself, trying to pay off this debt, and still have access to health care and rent.
Along with federal cuts, the Trump administration is implementing stricter work requirements for these programs in an effort to curb what it calls welfare dependency. More than 45% of SNAP recipients in Wisconsin are in working families, and the majority of Medicaid recipients in the state are part of the workforce. Wynn says the rhetoric suggesting beneficiaries are lazy and unmotivated isn't based on reality. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, showers and thunderstorms possible. We'll see a high near 82. Tonight, slight chance of a shower, low of 62. Mostly sunny for Sunday and highs around 80. Mostly sunny Monday, highs in the low 80s. For Tuesday, warmer, highs to the upper 80s.
Currently 69 degrees.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody, join us next time after a massage, a chiropractor appointment, and some sleep. We'll be back with regular programming from Madison on Monday. Join us then.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Tom Hartman here. You're listening to 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Everybody, hey, you've got the right spot. This is the Rational Revolution, proudly aired on the Civic Media Radio Network, and I am your host, Mark Becker. I'm so glad to be here, we're going to have a really, really interesting discussion because it's going to be something that I think not a lot of folks really understand. I know I don't, and trying to break down some of the issues that that we face in the state of Wisconsin, regards to the school board and funding and all of that, because I mean there's so much there, and I'm also really super excited about this guest because this is one of my dearest friends. We've got Laura McCoy, who has so much experience on the Green Bay Area Public Schools Board.
Thank you.
GBAPS, as it were.
Yeah, GBAPS.
GBAPS. Yeah. All right, very good. Yeah. Well, I'm so excited that you're here because their education and what runs it and what funds it and all of that is really in the news a lot. We've got a wrestling executive who's now, you know, very qualified to run the Department of Education, which is
she, Mark? Is she qualified?
Yeah. It's a hell of a job if you can get it. Yeah, maybe she can do the old body slam and, you know. I've seen a clip where she was body slammed.
By just a wrestler.
Wrestler. Yeah.
Okay, I thought maybe you were going to say our president.
No. Like a wrestler. Yeah. He was body slammed too, though, I think.
I've never seen that.
Or did
but
he do
please,
the body slamming?
Please pass that along.
I will. Yeah, no, it's good clip. So I want to talk about all that stuff because... I have kids. You have such experience in this. You have kids, and the assault on education is a real thing. And I came from the Republican side, obviously everybody knows that. And one of the things that was always talked about, it was always a talking point, is how the school systems are just indoctrinating our children and blah, 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 blah. And so where, how those talking points are really impacting some serious policy that are hurting, the most vulnerable, and that's a real thing. How the heck did you get started doing this?
Oh, that's a good question. It had a lot to do with my children growing up and some time kind of becoming more available to me. And I kind of was looking at the next phase of my life and I thought, well, what can I do? What can I do to make a contribution to my community? It was really that simple.
Yeah.
And a few people showed up in my life who kind of encouraged me. Brenda Warren.
Oh, I love Brenda.
Yeah. Brenda. Everyone loves Brenda.
Yeah.
And she, she gave years.
Oh, she was a fighter. Oh my God.
To this community, on the school board. And she kind of, we had some discussions about it, and next thing you know, I'm running for the school board.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I just want to start, though, with just a little bit of gratitude. I just thank the Civic Media for the work you guys do.
Oh, thank you.
I think that's I listen to your programs quite a lot.
Thank you.
And also, I just want to also state that I'm not here speaking on behalf of our board.
Yeah.
I'm just here as an individual board member.
So, yeah.
But when it, you know, when you're talking about politics and public education, I would like to, you know, I went into this gig naive, and I, and I, you know, I thought, you know, public education shouldn't be political.
Right.
Right. I mean, what's best for children should be obvious to people. Of course, that was part of being naive. But what I've found is that over the last 8.5 years, I've spent way, way more time than I ever expected basically begging politicians to care about public education. I've done this in Washington, D.C. I've done this in Madison. I've been to the Joint Finance Committee hearings on budgets several times. Locally, you know, just the lobbying basically on behalf of our kids in this community, I didn't anticipate having to do so much of that. Mm. I am happy to do that. That being here today is part of that, right? To let people know what's going on in their schools, how critical it is to our community and our economy. Mm-hmm. And that's just, you know, that goes with the territory.
Is there a type of side that seemingly would be more difficult to support public education than the other?
You mean,
it's pretty obvious.
Yeah. Partisans. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's pretty obvious who's been in charge in Madison now for a long time, which party, and the chronic underfunding of public education has been just devastating to our public schools in this state.
Underfunding and kind of undermining what they can do and who they can talk to and how they can teach and all that stuff. It's crazy. One of the things when I got started, you said when you were naive, I was a local elected official too.
Yes.
And when I was elected, you go and you say, all this funding is bad and this needs to change and that needs to change. And then I got in as a county supervisor. And my first meeting was with the library, and I learned, you know, the need of that the library has and what need they meet in the community. People that want to apply for jobs and people that want to research but can't at their house because they don't have internet and all that. Like, and so I was like stunned a little bit, and that was probably the final crack in my being a Republican, was seeing, oh my God, what need there is in the community and what people on my party and in my side thought of those people that had need.
Why wouldn't you support public libraries?
Oh, my God.
And why wouldn't you support public education? I'll never quite understand that kind of rationale.
It's interesting because I've seen people that have run for school board. So we're talking with Laura McCoy, who's a member of the school board. In their campaigns, it's, well, this is wrong and this is wrong and this person sucks and Laura McCoy, she's got horns on her head and, you know, all this stuff and she's hiding it. But then when they get in and they're elected, it's almost like they were punched harder than I was, because it's, oh my God, the need that's in the community is something that they didn't know, and the depth of need. And so much of what you guys deal with is, you know, this is being pushed under the rug and this is a conspiracy and all this, because a lot of things that you have to do, you're dealing with minors and you're dealing with personnel things. And so you can't talk about a lot of the juicy stuff that ends up in the media, because those are people's lives.
Well,
that's got to be really hard.
I mean, you do grow a thicker skin, like fast, just to kind of survive. But yeah, I mean, sometimes when things break in public news out of our school district, it's a little bit frustrating, because especially when we're talking about children.
Yeah.
The district is very much restricted as to what they can say publicly, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
These are people's children, and you can't talk about them in public. right. However, sometimes on the other side of that, there are people that are more than happy to go out and talk about it and can say whatever they want, which means they control the narrative.
Right.
Right. So I would just say to people, you know, be a little bit careful when you hear things out of the school district and ask, you know, if you're asking, why doesn't the school district say, you know, come out and be more transparent? Well, the answer to that usually, almost always, is you can't. Right.
Right.
You're legally restricted. So, but people don't understand that. And why would they? You know, like, it's not obvious, but you can't talk about people's kids.
No. And, you know, it's interesting, too, is like, I live in Pulaski, and they had a little bit of a dust up last year, I think it was, over. And it was a teacher that was yelling and making a big fuss and all of that. And the school district and the school board, they didn't say anything. And so, all, you know, on this community pages, because they have nothing else to talk about, it's like, well, this, and this is happening at Sunnyside, the school my kids go to. And it's like, well, number one, it's an amazing school with amazing teachers and amazing staff. Mm-hmm. And it was so sad that they couldn't talk about it.
Yeah, and explain themselves.
Right.
Why don't they explain themselves?
Right.
Yeah, no, we're not going to. We can't.
You can't.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so hard.
Yeah. Just want to shout out to our mutual friend, Jen Schwartz.
I love Jen.
I love her, too.
Yes, Jen Schwartz is she's the president of the school board in Pulaski, and she is an incredible woman.
Yeah.
She's a badass.
We've gotten to know each other a little bit through you.
Yeah.
You helped that, and I really appreciate that because, you know, it's really helpful. And I've made the same kind of relationships with some of the other board members in the area. As we grapple with all the various things that happen in public education, those relationships become very helpful and supportive. And because until you're kind of in the position, it's sometimes hard to
really
understand.
Lonely.
It can feel a little lonely. Sure.
Right. Yeah.
So
that's cool. You and Jen Schwartz and I'm, you know, it's just doing the right things for the right reasons. It's really cool. So yeah, I know you're both badasses. So we talk about the assault on education and funding and all of that. If you're talking to a room full of I would not say 5 year olds because they're not going to get it anyway, but like middle schoolers, how would you explain public schools are funded?
It's a combination between local taxes, state funding, and federal funding, and some grants. You know, it's funny because just recently I appeared before the city council to take on the whole idea of a voucher transparency on
tax bills.
Yes,
that was great.
Yeah, I mean,
talk about that. What is that?
Well, in the fall of 2023, our school board passed a resolution that said that we would like to see what our district loses to vouchers put on the tax bill, because as it is now, you see a certain amount that goes to Green Bay schools.
Yeah,
that's actually not accurate, because a chunk of that goes to vouchers, and that's not indicated on the tax bill. So people think that's all going to our public
school. So they see thousands of dollars that they're paying out of their pockets, and it's going to Green Bay Public Schools.
Yeah,
but it's not.
Not all of it. No. So we that resolution asked for that, and then it went before the city council in the following January, but on some procedural maneuvering, it got tabled. Well, it came back this last spring, and we passed it. The city council passed it.
Yeah, and which is huge, because people can see with their own eyes that this amount, thousands of dollars, minus this, that is being taken away from.
Well, there are some legal complications to that, and what happened is what people are going to see, it's going to be in the informational portion on top, the total amount that leaves our district to go to voucher schools.
Oh.
So it's not going to be. It isn't going to be exactly what that particular taxpayer is losing, but it is going to show you the whole amount that leaves our district. So, I mean, it wasn't easy. It took a lot of people to get that across the finish line. And there was some real opposition to it, but I'm really proud of that work and trying to explain to city council members about that. They tried very hard to understand it. They did their best, but let me just say it wasn't pretty.
Well, we're going to try to understand that a little bit more on the other side here. We're talking with Laura McCoy, Green Bay Public Schools board member here on the Rational Revolution on Civic Media. Stick around. It's going to be a fun conversation coming up.
A voice for Madison, real news and great conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
It's a party on the patio at the Lazy Oaf Lounge, and you're invited every Tuesday at 5:30. It's just Merle and a girl, and Thursdays on the patio feature singer-songwriter Shelly Faith.
Well, hey, bartender, won't you pour me another?
Music starts at 5:30. It's live music on the patio at the Lazy Oaf Lounge every Tuesday and Thursday. The Lazy Oaf Lounge, 1617 North Stoughton Road in Madison. Find specials, menus, and more at LazyOafLounge.com.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. An unwelcome surprise for Wisconsin farmers looking to apply for the Federal Rural Energy for America program, or REAP. The popular program helps rural small businesses and farmers invest in money-saving energy efficiency upgrades and clean energy. But the application window that was supposed to open July 1st was abruptly closed by the USDA. The agency says it's delaying the grant application window. The EPA is awarding a $700,000 grant to help Kenosha County pay for the final phase of restoration of the Pike River. Crews are restoring banks and habitat along the river and planting native pollinator-friendly plants. The project is aimed at improving the quality of water flowing into Lake Michigan. For a deep dive into environmental issues impacting Wisconsin, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns, it's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at hazeldenbettyford.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
Mommy, how come I can't sit in the front seat?
Because I love you and you're just not ready yet.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back. All right. You're on the Rational Revolution here on Civic Media. Hey, if you like this discussion, and you should, because you should bookmark this, because I think this is going to be pretty informational. You can download this anywhere you get your podcast. Check out the website, civicmedia.us. Download the app. That thing is sweet. And listen to us time and time again. Like, subscribe, share, all that stuff.
That's why I listen.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Podcast. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
At my leisure. Right?
Hey, thanks.
When I have time. Oh, yeah. I never missed your show.
Oh, that's great. That's Laura McCoy here. I will pay you later.
no money has exchanged. Right.
Oh, yeah. I suppose.
None.
Yeah. To be clear. So we were talking on the other side about the transparency with vouchers and how much money leaves the district. And I imagine it's a huge number that's taken out of. And so that number was basically what you would have had. And prior to vouchers, the district kind of did have that in essence. And that's been taken away.
Right. So, so last year, the Green Bay School District is made up of obviously the city of Green Bay.
Yep.
But it's also the village or town of Green Bay. Alloway, parts of Bellevue, parts of Ledgeview, Eaton, a lot of different municipalities. Obviously, the largest one by far is the city of Green Bay.
Yeah.
But the state allows us, when we lose that money to vouchers, to which, by the way, last year was almost $14 million.
Holy crap.
It allows us, and honestly, we have no choice but to replace that money through a local tax levy. So that falls right on our local taxpayers, property taxpayers. And so that's why we believe that it belongs, that number belongs on the tax bills.
Yeah.
So, we levy locally for that money. So taxpayers are paying for it.
So the Green Bay Public Schools lost $14 million.
Approximately $14 million. I think we also gave $1.1 million to a charter school up in Howard Suamico last year. That's for 1 year. And they, I'm sure, get money also from Howard Suamico and Pulaski and probably Ashwaubenon. So that isn't part of the voucher system because they're a public charter that comes right out of our operating costs, like right off the top.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. What people need to understand is when that money leaves, whether it's a charter school or voucher schools, that money now leaves the control of our taxpayers.
Yeah,
With our public schools,
right?
They have a school board that they've elected, and we answer to them. Whereas this money leaves our district and goes to schools where they don't have elected school boards. I don't even know if you can go to if their meetings are open. I know some you can look at their meeting minutes, mm-hmm. but we videotape our meetings. You can watch them,
right?
And you can live stream them, and you can.
I have done that, right?
Yeah, I mean, so there's all kinds of transparency around how we spend our money, and the taxpayers' money in our district, but all these other entities that receive taxpayer money have, I'll be honest, various degrees of transparency.
Oh yeah,
they're not all the same, but but they don't. You know, once that money's gone, we lose all control over it.
What is the difference between a charter school and a public charter school?
Oh God, you're gonna. I don't know how to explain that necessarily. The public charter up in Howard Suamico has to take all students. Anybody who applies, but so that might be the defining difference. I'm not sure exactly how to explain that.
Are a lot of the charter schools like the private religious type schools?
They can be.
Okay.
I mean, this is where it starts getting.
I don't know.
Gets really complicated. The voucher schools that we give money to are I think all of them are religious schools in this area.
There's somewhere in like some founding documents, I think, of the United States about that maybe glances over separation of church and state type thing. So, you know.
Yeah, I think I've heard about that.
Would be worth a look. And so, to kind of take public tax dollars and give them to religious private schools, boy, it kind of blurs that line a little bit.
Yeah, there's parts of that don't set well with people. I don't have a real strong stance on that. I would agree with you that I think there should be a separation, but mostly I'm worried about the funding and taxpayers and being answerable to the taxpayers of this community.
It's interesting because when I was in the Republican Party, this was a hotly debated thing because this was kind of, I know this came with the rise of Scott Walker. You know, we'll put that right on his plate because that was one of his huge initiatives that he did. Was vouchers it was interesting how they packaged it as transparency with tax dollars and taking control of education and school choice, you know. And I think it's such a it's not as honest as it should be. And as we're talking with Laura McCoy here, member of the Green Bay Public School Board, we're going to talk about, on the other side, we're going to talk about that being responsible for tax dollars and where and what school districts are going to have to do. Because you face these massive shortfalls. Okay, well, now what? It doesn't mean the need is not there. So, yeah, stick around here on The Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. We'll see you back in a little bit. Put a spell on me.
A new choice. Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Emergency crews in East Hollywood are on the scene of reports of a vehicle striking about 20 people in a crowd with 4 to 5 in critical condition. There are a few details known, but Southern California is in mourning. Law enforcement lining the road along to the county coroner's office in memory of 3 sheriff's deputies killed in an explosion Friday at a training facility. L.A. County Sheriff Robert Luna said,
"This is unfortunately the largest loss of life for us as the L.A. County Sheriff's Department since 1857.
Nobody else was hurt. Authorities are investigating the case. President Trump signed the first major piece of federal legislation regulating cryptocurrency. He's also instructed the Justice Department to seek the release of grand jury transcripts from the Jeffrey Epstein case. This is ABC News.
The Brewers shut out the Dodgers.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball.
The Brewers with a 2-0 shutout of the Dodgers last night in Los Angeles. William Contreras behind the plate. 23-year-old right-hander Quinn Priester on the mound kept the Dodgers batters guessing just how good of a performance manager Pat Murphy.
Yeah, he was as good as I've seen him. You know what I mean? And we were going to take him out for Ohtani. And I just felt like he deserved it. He's got 6 innings of shutout going, and I felt like he deserved it, and he would grow a lot from doing this.
Right fielder Sal Frelick is on the 10-day injury list with a grade 1 strained left hamstring. Isaac Collins filled in, got on base in the 5th, and scored the Brewers' first run on a double by Caleb Durbin. Then in the 7th, Durbin with a solo shot to deep center sailed over the wall at 410 feet to make it 2-0 Milwaukee. The Brewers have now won 8 in a row. Game 2 against the Dodgers coming up tonight with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. I love it when I hope rumors are true. According to the New York Post, there are rumblings that Fleetwood Mac will reunite. It's not just from the paparazzi, but rather from Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham. They did a coordinated Instagram post sparking rumors. Nicks posted song lyrics from Frozen Love, and Buckingham completed them. The two famously dated and broke up, just like fellow band members Christine and John McVie. Breakups have served the band well, though, because the album they were making during said breakups was Rumors and was awesome. I'm a sucker for a good cop show. My favorite detective show in the last several years is probably Amazon Prime's Bosch. And I also like the spinoff Bosch Legacy. The show has produced yet another spinoff called Ballard, which is based on a character introduced in the last season of Bosch Legacy, Detective Rene Ballard. The detective elements of the show are great, but star Maggie Q lacks a certain charisma. Having said that, there is a lot going on, and the cold cases Ballard takes on are pretty cool. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, showers and thunderstorms possible. We'll see a high near 82. Tonight, slight chance of a shower, low of 62. Mostly sunny for Sunday and highs around 80. Mostly sunny Monday, highs in the low 80s. For Tuesday, warmer, highs to the upper 80s.
Right now, it's 70.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
We've got Chris from Nina. What's your thought this afternoon, Chris?
Oftentimes you have only one set of viewers that will watch Fox News or watch CNN. What I really actually love and respect from all your viewers is the fact that you tend to have viewers that think on both sides of the aisle. To be open-minded, you need to be willing to listen and learn and possibly change your mind. You don't have to change your mind, but just being willing to listen.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
John Peterson and Gordy Young.
On our next show, former Madison Mayor Paul Soglin will join us.
And despite right-wing rumor radio, we're confident we're not on the Epstein list.
The John and Gordy Show, weekday mornings 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back. All right. You got the Rational Revolution. You got Mark Becker. You got my dear friend, Laura McCoy, which thank you again for coming. This is cool.
It's my pleasure.
This is my pleasure. I'm really happy that you're here. Member of the Green Bay Public School Board, Green Bay GBAPS.
GBAPS.
All right. We're talking about school funding, and you said on the other side that you're concerned about just being responsible to the taxpayers of the district. Talk about that.
Well, it's hard to do this without going back to the 90s, okay, when the revenue caps were put into place. And Green Bay was basically penalized for being a conservative, low-spending district. So our revenue cap was set low.
Oof.
And basically, every single year since then, we have been pushing against that revenue limit, right? I mean, we're one of the biggest school districts in the state, and
yep,
and people need to, when you talk about anything going on in our district, you can't compare us to like the districts around us, because you have to scale everything up massively,
yeah,
to understand the scope of our district. But those revenue caps inform all the work since then around budgeting. So we're constantly pushing against that. The only way we can, the state legislature only allows us to exceed those revenue limits through referendum. And you might have noticed, and I'm sure your listeners have noticed, that in recent years we're going to referendum about every other year.
Right.
You know?
I remember growing up, and there was a referendum to improve East High School and City Stadium and all of that. It was a huge, huge deal.
Yeah.
Huge deal.
Yes.
And now it's like every other year.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're doing amazing work through these referendums, and I can only express enormous gratitude to the voters of this community for constantly supporting our public schools.
Yeah.
Because of that, we are able to take some of these aging facilities. I mean, for a while, the kids couldn't even use the track at Preble. It was not safe.
Preble?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, there were so much work that needed to be done.
God.
And so through these referendums, we have beautiful stadiums. Our kids deserve that.
Yes.
Right? And our auditoriums and all the stuff, you know, that some people think of as extra. No, they're an integral part of the education of our students. And to give them the full experience, they should have access to these wonderful facilities, and taxpayers have provided that through these referendums. So, and another thing that I think a lot of people don't know is that we're currently operating under an operational referendum that was passed about 8 years ago, where that dumps about $16.5 million into our budget every year. That's about to fall off next year, so we're going to have to go back to referendum next year to fill that gap. And I don't know what that number will be, but I can promise you it's not going to be $16.5 million.
What happens with our WWE secretary when she talks about giving, just eliminating the Department of Education?
I think that would be tragic for this country. You know, that the Department of Education, their main purpose is to make sure that the civil rights of all the students in this country are uniformly applied.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, children have rights,
right,
you know, so, and unfortunately, historically in our country, not all states have applied civil rights equitably.
Yep.
You know, and that's a word we're not supposed to use much anymore, but it's important that all students be treated the same under the law. So that, you know, that department is supposed to protect our students no matter where they live.
That's so sad that that word is like taboo. And it's not. I don't think it's taboo. So basically, if that goes away, if there is a kid who is a member of the LGBTQ community, which I have, I think my cousin, I don't know if she's a niece. They're a niece. But they fit into that category. So they would be treated differently in Illinois, where they live, or Texas.
Potentially, yes. Yes. If that department doesn't stick with the protections that are currently in place. And I feel very strongly about that. Anybody who has a child that is in some category that is...
Special education.
Yes. I mean, it's incredibly important that they have those protections. They deserve to have all those same things that other children have.
So that their experience could be marketably different.
Yes, I'm afraid. I mean, not every state in the... I mean, granted, we have our problems here in Wisconsin, but we're still pretty... doing a pretty good job in public education. And here in Green Bay, I mean, I tell people we're holding up our piece of the sky here.
Yeah.
I mean, with the help of taxpayers and our amazing staff and our Board of Education, who is devoted to making sure kids have a good experience, we are doing the best we can. But it's been in the news recently, right, in the last few years of all the consolidation work we've done. That came with a price.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't easy. And, you know, those things were done in order to save in the long run money by closing aging schools. I mean, I would encourage everyone to go over and look at the job site for the new school at Kennedy.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And it's going to be a wonderful facility. And I'm super excited about that. But that, you know, part of the job of being on a school board is that you're making decisions that affect children who aren't even born yet.
Yeah.
And families that aren't even formed yet. Mm-hmm. And you're planning for generations to come. And that school is part of that. And one of the cool things about that school that I'm really excited about is that it's going to be, it's going to have geothermal
energy. Oh, cool. Really?
And solar panels.
Oh,
and,
neat.
And wow. Yeah, we're just Monday night at our school board meeting, we had a presentation about all kinds of energy saving projects that are going to save our taxpayers money ultimately, and also get us to our goal of being net zero by 2050.
Wow, we're talking with Laura McCoy, school board member of Green Bay Area Public Schools, that could also inspire other kids to, you know, learn about how is the school heated and how, you know, like that's
actually part of
that's really cool.
Part of this process and part of the commitment of our, we have a sustainability committee, is to bring our students along and to make it a mechanism for learning about energy saving and conservation. I mean, that's going to be their future.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get harder as time goes on. Your kids are going to have to probably live differently because of, you know, restrictions on energy or the cost of energy and the environment. So I'm proud of this work. It's another commitment that our board made pre-COVID. We passed a resolution about this, and COVID kind of got us off course a little
that
bit.
Screwed up a lot.
Yeah, but we're back. We formed a committee and they're meeting and they're doing some just amazing work. I'm so proud of that work.
And you know, it's interesting because the show, we're all over the state of Wisconsin. I think there are so many good people doing that type of work. And because it's a thankless thing to be on a school board.
Can be at times, but also I just want to make sure that people understand it's incredibly rewarding.
Yeah, I bet,
as well.
Yeah.
I mean, on any given day in our district, there's all kinds of amazingly good things happening.
Yeah,
you walk in our schools, you will see teachers teaching and children learning, and all kinds of amazing things happening. And I, you know, I'm really proud of our district, and I wish more people, I would love if more people would like tune into our school board meetings because they will see this, again, the scope of the work. It covers a lot of stuff that we learn about and then make decisions about, and it's just always a work in progress.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's yeah, and it's almost like so much of what you guys, you people in education, you're rowing against some really strong currents, you know, you're flying against some headwinds or whatever analogy you want to use.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of the times, you know, so much of our work is affected by politics and decisions made in Madison, and it often feels like the decisions made in Madison, I'm speaking again just for myself
yeah,
here,
yeah.
Are just so punitive toward public
right.
education.
And I got an opportunity to sit down with Governor Evers last summer, and I asked him about that, and I said, how, because he's a former teacher, and like, you've had to sign things that you know are going to hurt students and hurt schools. How do you do that? And he said, you work really hard to make it hurt as little as possible, but you have to know that, you know, that it's going to hurt. And that's what it's been like for the last 15 years.
Yeah. Until there's a change in Madison, I don't see that changing.
What can they do?
Yeah.
What should they, let's say they change and people that are pro public education come in, what could they realistically do?
I don't know, maybe freeze vouchers. I mean, we lose this as statewide, it's hundreds of millions of dollars to voucher schools that comes directly out of our public education system. And it's not like the money's not there to fund public education.
Oh, it's there. Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
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 You know, it's a choice. It's the choices you make. And really, with this latest budget, the burden is going to fall, not just in Green Bay, but across the state on taxpayers.
What happens in the budget?
Well, you know, the public education in the state is not going to see any increase in funding. At the same time, charter schools, choice schools, they're all seeing a huge bump.
Seriously?
In what they're going to get per pupil. Yeah. So in this next budget. So we're basically losing money because you always have to take into consideration inflation.
Yep.
Right? And they're all getting a big increase. So how do you explain that to people?
Yeah.
And so therefore you're going to see more referendums across the state. And at some point, and I don't blame them, taxpayers are going to be like, wait a minute.
Right.
I think people are starting to wake up across the state to the effects of vouchers on public education.
Yeah.
And honestly, they're pissed.
Yeah, and they should be.
Yeah.
And they should be. What happens to the schools then, the voucher and charter schools that are there that have kids there?
They
stop getting increases?
I'm not sure. I mean, it's hard to even think about that at this point when we're all struggling just to, you know, stay in the boat and keep it afloat.
Right. Yeah, right, yeah. God, that's such a frustration, you know, and it's so sad because I'm a product of public education, my kids are a product of public education, my wife, all that stuff, and there's so many good people doing...
Me too. I mean, I went to public schools, my kids went to Aldo Leopold and East here in Green Bay.
Yeah, Green Bay East.
I went to a public university, I went to UW-Whitewater.
Like, hell yeah.
You know, like funding matters in everything. Yeah. It's the driver. Everyone needs to pay attention to that.
Laura McCoy, I cannot thank you enough. I'm so glad you were here. Member of the Green Bay Area Public School Board. And we'll stick around for my thoughts after this. You're on the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. Thank you.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
Woohoo! Hear that? That's what having fewer hot flashes and night sweats can sound like. Veozah is the number one prescribed hormone-free treatment FDA approved for moderate to severe vasomotor symptoms, also known as hot flashes and night sweats, due to menopause. Veozah can cause serious side effects, including liver problems. Your doctor will do blood tests before and during treatment. Stop Veozah and call your doctor if you have symptoms of liver problems, such as feeling more tired than usual, decreased appetite, nausea, vomiting, itching, yellowing of the eyes or skin, pale stool, dark urine, or stomach pain. Don't use Veozah if you have cirrhosis, severe kidney problems, kidney failure, or take CYP1A2 inhibitors. Ask your doctor about Veozah. To learn more, call 1-866-239-1637 or go to Veozah.com. That's V-E-O-Z-A-H.com.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The Wisconsin Elections Commission issued a highly critical report of the city of Madison's former clerk after investigating how 193 mail-in ballots were left uncounted after the 2024 general election. The clerk was suspended by the city, then subsequently resigned. November 12th, a staff member alerted City Clerk Mary Beth Witzel Bell that a sealed ballot courier bag had been found, but Witzel Bell allegedly gave the staff no instructions to open or otherwise investigate, did not alert state or county officials, and went on vacation the next day. Just before Thanksgiving, unaware that an unopened bag had been found, an elections inspector reported a discrepancy in wards 56 and 65. December 2nd, inspectors found another unopened courier bag containing 125 uncounted ballots. The 400-page report found several leadership and procedural failures. It concluded, quote, "Rather than acknowledge these significant errors, the city clerk and her staff either ignored the issue or willfully refused to inform the necessary parties and seek assistance. These actions resulted in nearly 200 lawful voters' votes going uncounted, an unconscionable result," unquote. The report orders the city of Madison to complete several procedural reforms before the next statewide election in February 2026. We've linked to the full report at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
Are you or a loved one facing addiction? The Wisconsin Addiction Recovery Helpline offers free and confidential support 24/7. Powered by 211 Wisconsin, local trained specialists can help connect you with local service providers for treatment, peer support, harm reduction tools, and more. Call 211, text your zip code to 898-211 or chat at 211wisconsin.org. Help is waiting. Sponsored by United Way of Wisconsin.
As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Love Laura McCoy. God dang. I have to say, you know, she is such a good person and she's such a dear friend. And I, you know, I've been trying to get her on the show for a long time. And just because of that discussion, you know, there's so much that people don't understand. Oh, which, by the way, you're on the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got to get that housekeeping out of the way. Yeah. And if you want to hear more of that, do download the app. You know, share the show, like the show's Facebook pages, all on social media. We're there. But yeah, I mean, that's such an important discussion to have because there's so much that people have no idea about how schools are funded. They're just there, right? We took our kids to swimming lessons. Where were they held? They were held at the Pulaski Middle School pool. And that pool is such a huge member, a big part of the community. And there were people from all walks of life that were there because you could pay $30 and you could get your kids to learn how to swim, right? And someone was talking right next to us about how this pool is falling out of, you know, it needs renovations. And the school's board in the district said, look, if this needs something else, we have to shut it down. Well, then where do they go? Where do they go? Where do those kids go? Where do they learn how to swim? I don't know. I don't have a pool in my backyard where I could, you know,
And this is not just a Pulaski thing or a Green Bay thing. Schools in our communities all across Wisconsin are hubs of community. That is where people go to watch a football game on a Friday night, or that is where people go to see some good entertainment with a musical or a band concert or a choir concert. And it's a source of pride. You know, you drive through Pulaski, home of the Raiders, you know, or you go to East High School, you're in Red Devil country, right? And that's something that people can be proud of for the rest of their lives. And I look at the assault on public schools from elected officials. And again, this is not left versus right. This is right versus wrong. And this is wrong. And you see what damage vouchers are doing to let's take it, Green Bay Public Schools. There is a charter school that siphons so much money from Green Bay, $1.1 million. We just touched on it. Not going to mention the school. But the problem is, let's say, because this school was founded because parents wanted educational freedom, and I don't want my kids to have to go to school and wear a mask, and I don't want them to go and have to suffer through this Zoom school that they had to do through COVID. Oh, my God. My kid was in school during COVID, and he was in Green Bay Public Schools during COVID, and they did everything that they possibly could to make kids feel like they mattered. They did. And this school, because some selfish parents didn't want to send their kids to a different school, $1.1 million they take from the Green Bay budget. Just that one school. And statistics will tell us, you can look it up, statistics tell us that these charter schools have an average lifespan of under 5 years. So they'll get all this public money. They'll get all this public dollars. They'll make their money. And they go away. Well, okay. Vouchers were and charter schools were a thing of Scott Walker because we wanted transparency. We wanted freedom of education for our kids. Well, you don't get that because you could have an owner of a school laughing all the way to the bank and paying their teachers $20,000, $25,000 a year. Nobody knows. There's no transparency. There's no accountability. And so if this school, which is all over the news in Green Bay, they're trying to navigate some tough waters right now. What happens if it goes under? And it's fighting because the leaders of the school are fighting with the owners of the school. And you know, it's really bad. What happens to the kids? Right? And the public schools, they'll gladly take these children back. And they'll give them everything that they can, but they've already gotten that $1.1 million taken out of their budget. So now what? And these kids will go back to Pulaski, and they'll go to Green Bay, and they'll go to De Pere. And this is not a Green Bay thing. This is an epidemic that happens all across Wisconsin. Thank you, Scott Walker. Thanks a lot for that, by the way. And I believe that most common sense Republicans, they have no idea that when we talk about these vouchers, that it means that's what happens. And so I really have to commend my dear friend Laura for putting that on the tax bill, because I think it's going to shake people to the core, Republican and Democrat alike, because they don't know. They don't know that, oh my God, I thought I was paying all this money to the Green Bay schools. No. They're suffering. And I know my friend Ahmad Rivera, I messaged him about the budget. And I said, what's wrong with it? And he said, it hurts schools a lot because he voted no. And that's why. Because it really just crushes public education. And that stuff matters. Because you have a kid that goes to one of those charter schools and they, you know, that's the Montessori type or whatever it is. And then you go back to traditional learning, which has been studied, how do kids learn? And it's completely different. So when these kids go from these voucher schools to a public school, they're months behind where they should be, years behind where they should be. So they have to be caught up. Guys, public education, this stuff matters. Huge. So please, if you're a listener to the Rational Revolution, which, gall darn it, I'm glad you are, make sure you fight for public education. We do. And we'll see you next week here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm so grateful to be here and talking to you every week. We got a good guest next week, so stay tuned for that. I'm Mark Becker. Be well, guys.
This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Dozens of people were hurt, up to five of them critical, after a car plowed into a group of people in Los Angeles. ABC's Melissa Don's at the scene.
Groups of people that were apparently outside here of this music venue, the Vermont, here in East Hollywood, when suddenly a car slammed into the crowd. There was a crowd because there was about several dozens of people outside of that live music event, a taco stand, a valet stand.
Authorities in Los Angeles also investigating the cause of Friday's explosion at a training facility that killed three members of the Sheriff's Department explosive detail. President Trump is suing the Wall Street Journal and its owner Rupert Murdoch for defamation, claiming he did not write a 2003 letter to Jeffrey Epstein that the paper reported. A Dow Jones spokesperson said, "We have full confidence in the rigor and accuracy of our reporting." Secretary of State Marco Rubio says 10 U.S. nationals are back in the U.S. after a three-country prisoner swap with Venezuela. This is ABC News.